Hi, welcome to Embark. I'm Liz Solar. Happy Thanksgiving. Jack Monson once again joins me in studio, and we're going to take a departure from the political blah, blah, blah to talk about reasons to be cheerful, things that we are thankful for. But first, we start on an ornery note. We're talking to you passive-aggressive people who greet us after you haven't seen us in a few weeks or a few months with that faux concern about our well-being. You take one look at us and say, "Ooh, how are you?" We know you're judging that weight gain or zit on our chin. In any case, we take umbrage with it, and Jack is going to pick up the conversation here. Thanks for listening.
You see him at an event or a conference or something, just go, "Are you okay?"
And it's that thinly veiled, you know, there's a little bit of contempt lace on this faux concern.
Yes, I'm so concerned. I'm concerned that, looks like you're eating well. Oh, okay.
There's a little bit more substance to you than the last time. I always appreciate the people who just come out and say it. You look like hell.
Right.
Your good friends will say that.
Right.
I remember I was dating somebody who, I don't want to say they were totally inappropriate, but they were a big, big fat jerk. And I was at a party and my friend said, "Liz, could you come into the kitchen?" I went into the kitchen with them. I'm like, "You have to get rid of that loser."
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's rough. So some of your podcast listeners probably say that about me.
I don't think so.
Okay.
and if they do, they're going to have me to contend with.
All right. I was just fishing for a compliment.
I think you're fabulous. In fact, I have a very good friend that I met in broadcasting. When she first heard us together, she just thought it was magical. It was like unicorns and rainbows.
That's nice.
And today, speaking of unicorns and rainbows,
Skies
opening up and the sun shining, because I don't know about you, I'm kind of tired of all the blah, 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 blah.
Are you tired? You look a little tired. No, I'm that was my passive aggressive. Are you okay?
Exactly.
My favorite thing about the fall and the election season was the premiere of Yellowstone last week, which is the only television show that has been made since 1977 that I watch anymore. The big news, I'm not kidding about that, folks. If it's newer than the Rockford Files, I want none of it, except for Yellowstone. And the big news on Yellowstone is the main character, Kevin Costner, John Dutton, was elected governor of Montana. And the real treat for me, and I think everybody else who watches this show, was he was elected governor during the summer off camera. What they didn't do that most shows would do is they didn't do a year-long campaign for governor and will he win, will he won't. And because I think the creators of the show, I think they know that their audience is just tired of it and we don't want to watch an election, a fake election for a year. So the fact that they just made him governor was freaking brilliant. And now you have a whole new storyline and we didn't have to deal with politics in the fictional world after the past year of dealing with politics in the real world. So thank you, Mr. Sheridan and the other creators of Yellowstone for not putting yet another election on our plates this year.
Politics is the new sex in media. Remember, the old movies that have like that kiss or their that meaningful look. And then the next day, like you see somebody smoking a cigarette, someone,
they did it. Yeah.
And the woman always wraps that sheet around her, being very coy and going into the bathroom. And you always see that back dip of the sheet. The horse is out of the barn,
Right, right.
But of course, they did it because it was TV or the movies and decency. So it's a very decent thing that media is doing and saying, haven't you suffered enough?
Yeah. And I think there was a time in television and movies where politics got to be a cool thing to go after. I mean, maybe it was All the President's Men with Dustin Hoffman. And so it got to be a great thing for 20 years to do political content. And now it's just like, I don't even want the political content in the real world, let alone something that I'm paying to see. And if you look back, one of my favorite examples is the great Jimmy Stewart movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Ask anybody what party Mr. Smith was. And everybody says, well, it was my party. But they never named a party. And they never even made allusions to what party he may have been in 1948 or whenever that movie was made. They left it alone, right? There was no designation of party. That way it could be your party, whatever party you followed. And wow, we're so far away from that now. Like there would never be this good guy character that didn't take a side in a movie. Like you would have to name, you know, was he this party or that party? And then, you know, half the audience would dislike it immediately. So yeah, I think the generic leader without a party affiliation, those days are gone. And hence, that's why I watch very few things that are made since 1977.
Since we're talking about things that are cheerful, and because we're in that season of Thanksgiving, like things that we're thankful for, and this is all I will say about politics, things to be thankful for, cheerful about, is it's not January yet, but there was a peaceful transfer of power. People conceded on both ends. I did not win this election. Someone else did. And to your point about party affiliation, I think what this particular cycle proved is that sometimes we just vote for the person and not for the party.
Yeah, I think there was a lot more of that, with a few exceptions. I think there were some races where it was like, well, just, you know, hold the House or hold the Senate and hold your nose while you're at it, right? But I think there were a lot of people who... There were Republicans elected in New York, and there were Democrats elected in Texas. And, you know, so maybe we're getting away from the paint everybody with the same brush mentality and getting back to, you know, is this the right person for this particular job?
Exactly. And let's put a pin in this. Even, and I'm trying to remember the guy in New York, because I remember listening to him and going, yeah, sure. Okay, I think they had two pretty good candidates, and a really good candidate seemed to win. But he evaded the same question that many other people on the red side of the column, or the red column. So will you endorse he who shall not be named if he is your nominee? And people have still been a little squirrely about that, or at least keeping their options open, as I might say.
So, we've got a long time to keep our options open, though. By the time the people that you think are running for president right now, by the time we get to 2024, those two particular gentlemen will be 80 and 83 years old. So,
right.
Or 80 and 82. The world could change five times since then. We could have a world war. We could have a recession or two. We could have lots of things between now and then. So right, I think we can put a pin in that for a long time.
Oh, good. Because today it's really like an intellectual spa day for us. It's like, so Yellowstone, you mentioned, which I've never seen, but it's on the list. And you're one of dozens of people who have said you got to watch Yellowstone. So I guess I have to.
Yeah, I recommend it. I'm also of the belief of I don't like when people tell me I have to watch something, and I rarely recommend anything. I think Yellowstone, the main reason to watch it is you'd probably understand a lot more memes in social media. It's just part of the language of the country right now. There are so many shows that people tell me, oh, you're not watching, name any show on Netflix.
Right.
And my answer is no, because I don't have Netflix. And I also don't have HBO, Paramount Plus, Discovery, or any of those other plus things. Right? I don't have any, right? So people tell me all the time, like, oh, you haven't seen the whatever?
Mm-hmm.
No, I haven't. Someday I'll see it, I'm sure, if it looks interesting. But there's just so much content out there. There was a time when the world was young that there were three networks plus PBS, and that was it. So you pretty much had to watch one of those things. But now there's just so much. I can't possibly consume it all, and I don't know where to start.
There's a lot of content. A lot of it's good. There's a lot of junk out there, too.
Yeah.
You know, I do have Netflix because I keep forgetting to shut down my subscriptions. Can we do something about this whole subscription culture that we have? It's like, oh, my God, I forgot I even had that. Netflix will recommend things and they'll give it, you know, whether it's a Rotten Tomatoes type of thing, and it will have like 83% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't even know what that means. Maybe it should be hit with Rotten Tomatoes. But there have been a couple of series, and I thought, this is, the writing has been terrible. And I'm trying to think of one, and it's about this upscale couple who move into a house. And I'm trying to remember, it might even be Jennifer Coolidge, who is the, you know, realtor. And I think everything should have Jennifer Coolidge in it.
Yeah.
Because she's hilarious. And I might be wrong on this, but it's a whole series. And I started to watch it, and it had some great, great actors. And I thought, oh my God, the script is terrible. It's totally unbelievable. 15 minutes later, I'm off. And it's like, you know, one of the top 10 on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So when someone says you got to watch it, maybe you just have too much time on your hands, and maybe you're falling asleep during the series. Yeah. So
that,
I don't even know what to say.
And I think more important than watching more shows on Netflix, you just need to listen to more podcasts. That's really what people need to do.
Well, I think they should listen to the Rockstar Social Geek Radio, because you are, I'm going to shill for a moment, and
okay,
you're one of my nearest and dearest, and I just have to say, you're an amazing host. You really keep conversation going. You know the questions to ask, and you always bring diverse types of people onto your show. So we really get enriched conversation, which is sorely lacking. So I just want to say hats off to you.
Thank you.
Jack Monson. You are the rock star of rock stars.
I know. I keep saying I'm just the DJ, the guest of the rock stars. And you were amazing on the one that that we just did with my friend Heather Anderson and Derek Abelman. And it was a good chat. You and I have talked about this off air. You get to a certain point in the content you create or whatever you do for a living or a hobby or anything, where you just want to work with the people you want to work with. Right.
Yeah.
And the idea of, hey, let's go start some other business and get some other clients and work with other agency people. And my first thing about that is, ugh, there's going to be some horrible people we have to deal with. Right. But, you know, in my little perfect universe of just on these podcasts we're doing, you know, I can pick who I want to be on those shows. And it's only people who I think the listeners will also listen to that person and think, oh, this is kind of a treat. This isn't some boring person who's going to come on and try to sell me something, right? That's what I'm trying to avoid with this. But it's somebody who could be from way out in left field, but it's going to be interesting.
Amen to that. So many, when I first started podcasting, and you know, you get people you know, but they would all get into their pitch.
Click on this Instagram ad. I really don't want to start my own accounting firm or whatever. And here comes the pitch. I like to do the pitch for the guest on a podcast sometimes. Hey, so-and-so, if we want to learn more, where can we check it out? What's your website? Sure. Let me know where we could send people. And that's fine. And then people don't feel like they need to come on and do a commercial, right? Because let's face it, I love the advertisers on podcasts. They make my life terrific. Most people are not tuning into a podcast to hear a commercial, right? The only time, once a year, we tune into one program in all of media to check out the commercials, and that's the Super Bowl. So nobody's really there for the commercials. So if we can make the commercials or the advertorial or something, if we can make it nice and easy and kind of take that off of the guest's shoulders so they don't feel like they have to go there and sell their thing, then maybe they can be a little bit more open and honest about whatever topic we're talking about. And they don't feel like, oh, now I got to pitch my thing.
Well, it has just much more weight if the person who is speaking on the show, the announcer, so to speak, the host, I just think it's more believable if they're the person controlling the copy. I mean, we both worked in radio. And if you have your top personality in the morning reading the script first of all, they're probably going to give you more time because, especially if it's a morning show, they have people to play off of. So advertisers are getting such a huge bang for their buck having that thing read live. First of all, if it's a live podcast, but even if it's not, if there are other people in the room making that show go, you're getting so much, and it's more alive. It's nothing static about that ad. I would love to, since we're on that subject, talk about advertisements in podcasting and in general, because it's both in our wheelhouse. We're both voice actors, and we've certainly done our share of commercials. You know, it occurs to me that commercials are the place where people go to the bathroom or get a snack or, you know, if we have our DVRs, we're like buzzing by them. How important can they be? How integral to, you know, any show, whether streaming or broadcast or cable, whatever means it's happening. It's sort of like if that tree falls in the forest and nobody's around, does anybody hear it? Those commercials are kind of like those felled trees in the middle of the empty forest.
Yeah.
What do we do about that? And I want to preface it a little bit by I happen to have the privilege and fun of working for probably one of the most creative persons that I ever worked for ever. Happened to be at a radio station, and he was a guy who did not love research. He, and once they brought in all the sort of efficiency and research experts, you know, his days were numbered because he was totally.
He was a gut man.
He loved the streets. And he was.
What's the word on the street, kid? Yeah.
So his partner was owned a salon. And he'd say, well, Eddie says that this is what they're talking about. Like 20 people were in and talking about that. That's what was happening. And it was a younger demographic, so it was very clued into that. And his philosophy, his name was Sonny Joe White, dearly departed. His approach was, let's make the commercial sound like they belong on this station.
Yeah.
Let's make them part of the programming so that people won't. And he never said commercial free.
Right.
He might say continuous music.
Continuous 90 minutes music. Of continuous rock. Right.
Right?
Yeah. I love that.
The commercials would be, and they were fun. They were funny and crazy. And they were alive, just filled with, oh, what's that? Oh, it's a commercial. That's kind of cool. With all the creative minds and all the money spent, why don't we come up with commercials that I don't want to blow through?
I think something happened between whatever year that was, 1980, whatever, and now the good folks at, and you named it, research, the good folks at Coca-Cola and Pepsi and Gatorade and all of those places came in and said, no, we're paying for this time, and we don't want your possibly high DJ.
oh no, they were definitely high.
I was trying to be nice. We don't want your mid-level air talent speaking for this. We have these brilliant guys on Madison Avenue in gray flannel suits who say research shows. This is the choice of a Pepsi generation, right? So they're doing the creative now. And sometimes it's not bad. You know, I mentioned Super Bowl commercials a few minutes ago, and some of the funniest things or the most impactful things we've seen on television in the past couple of decades were Super Bowl commercials, right? However, most of them are terrible. And probably your friends at that radio station in Boston could have done something much more interesting and at least kept the audience there for that 30 or 60 seconds. And I think bringing it back to podcasting, you and I talk about Bill Maher a lot. His audio podcast is one that I never skip ahead past the commercials because he might say something funny during one of those live reads. Right. You know, he throws little things in, and it's not some canned spot from Pepsi or Coke. It's him actually talking about whatever kind of odd advertisers are on his audio podcast. I don't want to miss it. I think it is part of the show. So I don't skip past it. That's what I want my podcast audience to feel too, that they're going to miss something if they just jump ahead 15 seconds. I don't think you know, I'm at the level of creative or interesting that Bill Maher is at, but who is? But I think we could all do that. You know, let's make the sales pitch a little bit more interesting. And just like your friends in Boston, make it part of the show and yeah. make it seamless, right? Like there's just so much power in that.
How do we change that? Because one of the tools that supposedly has been in vogue and coming into vogue is humor. I don't sense a lot of humor in commercials. I mean, the funniest ones yeah. or some of the funniest ones in kind of recent memory are the Betty White, God rest her soul, in anything. Yeah. And like, I think the Snickers advertisements were pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. Those were good. I also see a lot of commercials with stand-up comedians. I'm thinking of a series of Budweiser commercials with a couple of stand-up comedians from a few years ago that left me thinking, how much money did these typically funny people get paid to be unfunny for 30 seconds, right? Like,
ooh, ouch.
Wow. Like, oh, this was horrible. They really should not have done this. I hope they got paid well because their phone might not be ringing in the near future. Again, it's a case of, did they hire a comedian to jump in there and be funny for 30 seconds? Or did they hire the name to go in and read this really kind of lousy script that they wrote for 30 seconds? And I think that's where the Madison Avenue folks get it wrong.
And I wonder how much freedom they get, because some people, it's like the higher their freak flag is, the better. Like Nick Kroll,
mm-hmm.
he does those pants commercials, and I don't even know whether I'm pronouncing it, or like Bonobos or something like that.
Yeah, but yeah.
One is he's posing like he's on this rotating platform, like he's in a 900 commercial. He's just very funny because he's parodying something that's quote unquote a serious commercial. But he does these things, and he takes the trope of being a sex symbol, and he really plays with it because funny guy. Sex symbol? We'll see. But I love that they use that trope, and he's in on the joke. Which yeah, I think makes it even funnier.
And you know what? And you're in on it too. I think that's part of humor that we've gotten away from, is humor's gone from everybody's in on the joke to we're going to pull this thing on these people and it's not going to be very funny to them, but it's really funny to us. And I think that's where we've gone down the wrong path as well.
And there is this fine line of, is it really funny if someone's crying now? There's that, right? There's that side
yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
Or is there anything that I can say that will never make you cry? Have we become, as one of my brothers used to say, you're too sensitive. Have we become too sensitive to it? Are we overreacting to it? Are we reacting? Because things go in and out of style. I mean, things are cyclical too. There are certain things that you can just never say anymore.
Right.
And you're thrown off the island. Comedians, comics, their lives are not any easier these days.
How on earth can you be a comedian now? You can't play universities, right?
No.
You get canceled. There will be some, you know, freshman liberal arts studies major who's campaigning outside. Hey, I was a liberal arts major, liberal with a small L, who will be campaigning outside to have you shut down. And that's why. And it's too bad, because back in the day, universities were like this great place for comics to, just like bands, to hone their craft and really come up. And, you know, people would say, you know, wow, we saw Jerry Seinfeld played my university in 1987. Also in 1987, REM played at my university, right? Like it was kind of that. This is where the next big thing is going to come from. And it's all going to come out of college events. And I'm sure that's not happening now. I guess if you're a comedian now, you just have to stick to TikTok and YouTube, right? And do your business there.
I guess I don't know why that's any more or less offensive. Like if you're still on a platform saying this stuff, yeah. It's just that you're, I don't know, maybe hidden. And I'm thinking that TikTok, that's kind of a young person's platform for the most part. So are you not offended? I don't want to get into a conversation about this because this is, I think, stepping on a landmine. But I heard about Dave Chappelle's opening, his monologue on SNL.
Saw it. It was something. It was.
I have opinions about it, and
okay,
not all good, not all bad. But I was thinking about, like, what could I measure that against in some ways? Because I know some people who said I couldn't sleep after I saw it because they were frightened by what he said.
They were. What were they frightened by?
The anti-Semitic insinuations. Oh, boy. To be fair, it's somebody who's Jewish. So yeah. I'm not in that group. I can't relate in the same way. But I was thinking about one of my all-time favorite inspirations, Mel Brooks. And I watched every Mel Brooks film. So Mel Brooks, two friends of mine who could quote every line of a Mel Brooks film, went to see the 40th anniversary of Blazing Saddles.
A movie you could not make today.
Several years ago, okay? And it was on like the 60-millimeter screen.
Yeah,
it was, you know,
sure.
Like the big theater in Boston. After the film, Mel Brooks himself came out and did like 30 minutes, like his shtick and Q&A. And he never missed a beat, 90 or 91 at the time. And he was so sharp. And one of the questions he got asked was, do you think you could make Blazing Saddles today? And he said, I didn't even know whether we could make it in the 70s. So what I loved about him is that everything is like, let's take some of these things seriously, but let's not take ourselves seriously. Everybody got lampooned. That's what made it funny, because everybody was in on that joke. There was nobody that was spared anything. Mm-hmm. And at the end, there are a couple of groups that I will not, you know, the very unkind phrasing, but they said, okay, we're going to take this group and that group, everybody but the Irish.
Everybody,
and then there was grumbling.
Irish, right. Like, right.
And I'm Irish. I thought that was pretty funny. I mean,
right.
You know, but we can make fun of ourselves. We don't like it if somebody else does. I felt he was so democratic at just showing how bent we all are. And saying, but you know what? That's okay, because we've got all these different bent people together and made a damn funny movie.
Right. I'm going to get the phrase wrong, but there's a phrase about showing the absurdity by being absurd. And that's where the, you know, we won't work with the Irish line from Slim Pickens. That's where that comes in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Showing the absurdity by being absurd. Everybody got it in 1973 or whenever that movie came out. But now, could you imagine Slim Pickens would be... he would be driven out of town on a rail from that line with Mel Brooks under one arm, I think. So
I wonder if we just have this issue now that we don't understand satire.
Right.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I had a brother who had Mad Magazine around all the time. So there was, you know, this lampooning stupid stuff because people were taking it seriously. It's like, no, I don't really think you should take this seriously. It's actually kind of ridiculous. So we've lost that ability to differentiate between satire. Now I'm just saying, I'm making this so ridiculous to let you know how hurtful and ridiculous this is. I mean, I'm a huge liberal arts person. You know, Jonathan Swift, A Modest Proposal. There's a famine going on in Ireland. So what does he say? Well, eat your kids. Mm-hmm. And if he did that now, like DSS would be after him, the police, they'd have the FBI, you know, there'd be all of this conspiracy stuff. And basically he's saying things are so bad. This is what it's going to come to. But he did it all in humor, and he did it to basically attack the establishment, the you know, the people who were oppressors or whatever.
Right.
Or
that's what a court gesture did 400 years ago, right? He was the person who could make fun of the king. That just cannot happen now. You know, Mel Brooks could do it in the 70s and 80s, but I don't know that anyone can do that now and still, you know, have a show the next day. You're going to get asked to leave the building.
You know, maybe it's the style, too, that Mel Brooks did it with his humor was gentleness to it and shtick and kind of self-deprecation as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there wasn't that anger. I didn't think David Chappelle came across as an angry guy at all, but there might be people who perceive that he's got some kind of an axe to grind.
It's funny you mentioned him along with sort of the Blazing Saddles comparison, because when I see Dave Chappelle, I think Richard Pryor, right? It's very similar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Richard Pryor famously was Mel Brooks' first choice to be in Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
And the movie studio said, oh, he's too dirty. he's like, we can get past a lot of things, but ooh, he's just a little too blue. So they went with Cleavon Little, who was brilliant.
Absolutely.
But imagine Blazing Saddles with Richard Pryor. And yeah, I kind of see that now, where there's not too many people who can thread that needle the way that Dave Chappelle is threading it right now. If he was just a little bit too far off one edge, he would not be invited onto a show on NBC.
I also wondered, in his trying to kind of satirize a lot of this stuff, if he didn't go far enough, if he didn't make it even more ridiculous, because I think he could have overstepped a few landmines himself. Had
and
he
just
been able
really
to
really clowned out,
or not not clowned out so much, but made it so ridiculous, you know, brought that satire really beyond the edge, so we could see, oh, he's definitely poking fun of this or holding it up as something that's not good. And at the same time, he's, you know, he's always treading a line, which I think that comics have to do.
Mm-hmm. The thing I noticed the most when he came out on stage was he did not have a lit cigarette. And there was that was a signal to me that he's going to tone this down. And it's like, I can't believe he doesn't have a lit cigarette. Why is he on stage without, you know, the ultimate symbol of screw you establishment right now is lighting a cigarette in public.
Yeah.
And offending 90% of the people in the room, right? Like that's the whole, that's what he uses a cigarette for. He doesn't even smoke it, right? He just lights it and has it there in your face. He did have a cigarette later in the show. When he introduced the musical artist, he had a cigarette. So that was there, but not during the opening monologue. And I think there was something symbolic about that.
Well, that's an insightful observation, and I'll go a little further. I'm in this like writers group right now, so everything has even more meaning. It's, you know, sort of the, you know, the heat, the smoke, the incendiary symbolism of that. But I love that you picked up on that, and I totally missed it. And for people, it's easy to look at things and say, well, I'm being objective about this, and I kind of get what he was saying, and I believe it was satire, but I'm not in groups that were spoken about. So it's a lot harder to totally defend what he was doing, although I feel like we have to start defending some people who are comics, and their job is to get us to think.
Yeah, and it's where do you want the freedom of speech line drawn? If Dave Chappelle cannot say satirical things about our society, then I think we're finished. Or people, you know, comedians of Dave Chappelle's stature. There needs to be a place for them. Doesn't mean everybody has to watch it and like it. That's the other part of anything in media that people just don't seem to get, is someone can really enjoy Dave Chappelle over here, and that doesn't mean you have to watch it. And that doesn't mean what he says is going to become public policy, right? God forbid, you know, or anything of the sort. Sometimes you have to let people do and say what they want. And if it's not affecting you, then why are you standing out front protesting it? And I think that's just where we are not right now.
There was some quote about David Chappelle did what Kanye West could not, or yay, whatever, whoever he is this week.
Yay, he, I every time I think I have this, we change names. Yeah.
So he said, you know, he's normalized anti-Semitism. And I'm like, I don't think that's what he intended to do. And again, I have no authority to speak on this because I'm not part of that group.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, I don't want to put my foot in it, basically. On the other hand, we have to start talking about this stuff. If it's a legitimate problem, then we really do need to start talking about it. Like, why? So how do we do this? You know, who gets kicked off the island? Who gets canceled? Why do they get canceled? Things seem unacceptable or acceptable until they're not. Sponsors will hold on to you until their hand is forced.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that it was, you know, I'm not sure some of these cancellations were top of mind at the beginning of that news cycle, but certainly somewhere in the middle of that, there was a pressure to cancel.
And when corporate sponsors cancel someone, I always wonder, did you not look at this person's body of work before you handed them $50 million? Or is it now suddenly there's pressure, so now we have to cancel him, or now we have to fire him or get him off of our contract? It's like, you knew this person was out there, maybe a little ridiculous, or, and again, I'm not defending Kanye West whatsoever, not a fan, but the people who hired him or gave him a contract for whatever the sneakers were, are you acting like you have no idea who this person was and what his, the whole reason you hire someone like that is because there's controversy and there's going to be a big splash and there's going to be, you just didn't want it to go against you. So they're playing with fire. And I don't know. I don't really care. I think he'll be fine. I'm sure he'll find other work. And if he never finds work again, I probably won't notice because I'm not exactly following his work.
I mean, Adidas was, I think it's Adidas, right? Was that who his contract was? You know, Adidas is a fairly older brand in terms of sneakers, footwear. And I'm thinking, so why didn't you think that your brand ambassador, for lack of a better, you couldn't find like a female soccer player to do that, or you couldn't find some guy who has some philanthropic, or who buys these sneakers after all? It's kids. Right. Yeah, adults wear them. And then kids are like, oh, but so-and-so's the person who's the public face of this. And kids don't know. Like Kanye West, I'm thinking by the time kids are, you know, 17, they're probably like, done with Ye.
Yeah. We hardly knew Ye.
Oh, but you are on fire today. Wow. So let's talk about something good to get back to.
Okay.
So, because we just.
Yeah, I thought we were talking about good things here. Now we went down
but,
the Kanye.
But we went down the Liz and Jack road, which is like anything we want to talk about, we're going to talk about it. But so tell me something like, all right, the holidays coming up, it's the end of the year, reflecting on things. What's there to be happy about, thankful for, any of those things?
I don't know. Economically, I'm going to pass on that question.
Okay.
We are not involved in a major war, right? That's a good thing. I hope that's still the case by the holidays. Things are not great right now, but it's still better than any other place on earth. You know,
agreed.
I take a little solace in that. And I think just try to keep making it a little better. You know, I don't know that that's really possible in the short term, but eventually, you know, the pendulum will swing. Don't bet against America because you're going to lose. We will get back someday. Don't know how soon, but things will improve economically and politically and foreign policy wise and everything else. I mean, it will improve. We just got to hold it together.
I think it's already improving. I mean, just in terms of with economics, the inflation numbers were better. Some of that has subsided, and that's improvement. I will take improvement wherever it leads us. I guess my happiness is less global right now. And one thing, and you'll appreciate this because you've been going out and networking for months, but I'm generally in the Bat Cave, which you see right now. I went out and I networked today. I did a network lunch and met some great people. And all those people on Zoom, I'm like, you have legs. That's awesome.
You're tall. You
know,
wow.
Right? Yeah. You know, so it's just great to be with people. I don't care who those people are. They were fabulous and fun. And that was really great. I think I told you yesterday because we canceled. My dog is fine. Now she's fine. She was spayed last week.
Ah.
Which I guess is a win for overpopulation and, you know, or
and long-term health. That's good.
Long-term health. And that's good. But she had some complications. So she had that cone of shame on. And I'm telling you, she's just self-aware enough to be like, what are you doing to me? So we had to get her a donut. And I'm coming home with like salve for her tummy and antibiotics. And I mean, she was just kind of being a pill for 48 hours. She had a little bit of a temperature. So brought her to the vets and she's all okay now. And she's just acting like the princess canine that she is. So that's good. And Thanksgiving's coming up, which is one of my favorite holidays ever.
Yeah, it's Christmas without being overly commercialized. It's food and family and football and, you know, just spending time with people that you want to spend time with. maybe without having to spend a fortune to do so. So yeah, that's a great holiday. I think I wish the Thanksgiving season was longer.
Me right? too. I think it should be a week or a week and a half. I mean,
oh, it just gets blown by, you know, I mean, we're already in mid-November and we're in full blown Christmas mode already. So it kind of gets lost
right after Halloween, you know, October 30th, yeah. They're bringing out the lights and the trees and can I just enjoy like the orange and yellow leaves for one more day before you start doing
yeah.
that?
Yeah, because by early to mid-December, you're just tired of it already and you just want it to go away. So shorter seasons.
I propose the big pant week because I come from a family where love to cook, love to eat, live to eat. So there's the ramp up to the holiday. Where right. you're just like, you have to test everything and make sure that no one's going to get sick on it. And then there's like the day of, and you're eating that. And then, you know, maybe you're snacking on it at 8 o'clock at night. And then there's the next day where you basically take that whole meal and put it between two pieces of bread.
Right. Leftovers for 2 days, maybe more. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I also propose that the Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend should be like a national pizza day because you've been eating turkey and turkey trimmings and leftovers for you're on day three of that. And it's like, you know what? Let's shift. Let's go over and let's get a pizza. So that's my new thing is got to get back to the pizza diet on that Saturday after Thanksgiving.
And you would be eating your Chicago style pizza.
Yes, but I, not all Chicago pizza is deep dish. That's kind of a trope that is not always true. I'm a big fan of the thin crust tavern style pizza.
Tavern style. Wait a minute.
Yes.
Okay. Get back to that.
Okay. So it's thin crust, but you don't slice it in those ridiculous New York triangles. It's sliced in squares, right?
Oh, yeah.
And your typical topping would be nothing ridiculous, but it would be, you know, the best tavern style pizza would be like sausage and onion or sausage and mushroom. That's it. Nothing ridiculous. We're not going to put a pineapple on
no!
it.
You oh, know? No. No. No.
We're not going to do any of that. Like good old fashioned tavern pizza, right?
Okay.
Though, you know, I have a column coming out December 1st in Franchise Dictionary magazine talking about branding where I do talk a lot about pizza. And the thing with pizza is this is it's all pretty good, right? I don't care where you're from or what style it is. It's still pizza.
It's dough, tomato, cheese.
Yeah, I'm in. It's all good.
No, there's nothing to dislike about it. And I just want to say, because I have had the pleasure of visiting Italy, and when you go into those little bakeries or whatever, they have pizza and they are sliced in those squares.
Yeah, old school.
So that is tavern. So I have to say, paisan, one slice of tavern.
Better make it two. Sometimes those slices are a little small.
Yeah, there you go. We have healthy appetites here.
Yeah.
An appetite for what? Appetite for chatting. An appetite for conversation.
Yes, conversation.
And pizza.
And a little bit of understanding. So I guess this is our Thanksgiving episode. So I will say again, I'm thankful for these conversations. It's been a pleasure chatting with you and starting this series up this year. And hope we continue this into next year.
Oh, I'm with you. We're going to be eating those leftovers together. And at some point we will actually meet and I'll say, oh, you have legs.
Yes. Wow. Look at that. Live and in person.
Always a pleasure. We'll do this again. Thank you for coming out to play.
All right. I will see you soon, my friend. Thank you.
If you like what you hear on Embark, share this episode with a friend, tell a few people about it, and please subscribe. You can always get in touch directly at liz@embarkthepodcast.com. We know you have a busy week, a busy schedule. Perhaps you're in your car going to visit friends and family for the holiday. We thank you for taking us along for the ride. See you next week, and thanks for listening.